There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1002, July 24th, 2023. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say it's a new track record, 12 in a row, 9 out of 11. We have more tales from the trip, and the truly train has arrived in Tokyo. We shall explain gladly. Back to you.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Max wins again by 33 seconds. Please, please, no more Pirelli experiments on Grand Prix weekends. McLaren's rise back to the top. Is it legitimate or fake? And of course, this week, Nas went to Watkins Glen. He interviewed a longtime F1 Weekly listener, so he's going to have all the details on this Watkins Glen history extravaganza. And of course, I'm here to tell you that we do need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. I want to thank Jason Bentley, another old F1 Weekly dude that keeps on giving. Thank you, Jason. And Nas, welcome to the studio. What a glorious race. The domination continues.
Absolutely, sir. This is the new motorsports world order. Whether LCH on pole or Checo digs a new hole, rain from the sky or track bone dry, I think even if Max starts from pit lane, end result is and will be the same. Now, what was interesting is 0.003 second was the difference between LCH and Max in Q3. And just a personal thought before the race, even if LCH had taken the lead at the start, he was going to be English toast as soon as DRS was deployed. But Max said das Vidania to all the formalities and made everybody's life easy peasy by passing his BFF on the very first corner of the very first lap. As Mr. Jones would say, what's new, pussycat? Your thoughts on the start and how exciting the Hungarian goulash was?
Well, I mean, the start, and I hate to say this, but first of all, I mean, the whole qualifying for me was bogus. I mean, hards in Q1, mediums in Q2. It was a Pirelli festival, and that's why we had such a weird, I mean, look what happened to Guan Yu. I mean, oh my God. So, I don't know. I don't know what to think about all these Liberty Media gimmicks, but it is what it is. And we haven't even gotten to Vegas yet. But no, it was exciting. And, I mean, even Nico Rosberg. Oh, and I have to mention that Danica Patrick has been promoted. She was at a European race. I'm going, wow, look at that dress. She's looking hot. She's had those legs toned and massaged. She was awesome. But Nico Rosberg, I mean, he was going, oh my God, Lewis Hamilton, he's the best at these starts. He could take off and win this Grand Prix. And I'm going, what universe is this guy watching? It was very interesting. I was happy. My favorite part is when I go out and find photography of all these happy people. And Mercedes, instead of just leaving a JPEG number, they named their photographs. And the one I got of LCH was called Joy. So that's pretty cool. Mercedes was pretty happy. They needed that pole more than anybody in the world. Max can start from anywhere, the dirty side, the clean side. And I thought the excitement part was Lando Norris trying to get in there and cause trouble, which he did. It was very exciting, and I loved every minute of it.
Yes, sir, absolutely. And speaking of Collie, let's talk about the cat that got out of the bag on Saturday. Now, F-104 Starfighter was a beautiful supersonic interceptor from Lockheed. That is also the number for LCH in Formula One. Record-setting 9th pole position at the Hungaroring for Toto's Starfighter. Career total for pole positions now in F1, 104. Long way from 2nd place Michael Schumacher, which, you know, says a lot about LCH. Lewis and Max on front row. We need more of this and more of Brazil 2021. McLaren Mojo at Silverstone was no flash in the pan. Road to all papaya, Norris and Piastri. And you know, interestingly, Silverstone is very different than Hungaroring. And I had my concern, I did not want it to see the McLaren Mojo disappear in Magyar Republic. So if they can go quick at Silverstone and quick at Hungaroring, chances are they will be very quick. Maybe lightning quick and only finish 20 seconds behind Max at the next round, the mother of all tracks, Spa-Francorchamps. Another wonderful Hungarian uprising you mentioned was Guan Yu Zhou, the Chinese driver in fifth, which was very, very impressive. And he out-qualified both cars from his engine supplier, which means Frederick Vasseur's fortune cookie Sunday evening said, "You, too slow now. Like the flowers need the rain, F1 Weekly needs machismo." Nando qualified 8th and, more importantly, is the only driver to reach Q3 for every race so far this season. So he is doing what he can with what he has. Yuki Tsunoda feeling Rod Stewart's first cut is the deepest. He was out in Q1 while new teammate advanced to Q2 to start 13th. Down by the Danube, also out in Q1, was last year poleman George Russell. Slamming on the desk was Toto. Somebody needs to tell Mr. Wolf, "Toto, Russell is not Rosanna." Were you disappointed with George Russell not being at the front and his teammate was on pole?
Well, once again, we had a bizarre tire display for Pirelli, but also, to do that here where you have a lot of traffic issues, and he got stuck out. He went out at the wrong time. He had to slow down to let Carlito by. Everybody was hustling, and that's the way it is. I mean, it's a short track. You got to make it out there and perform. That's why I was surprised they did the Pirelli. Well, on the other hand, it's probably the best place to do the Pirelli experiment. So there you go.
Now, before the race even started, Checo in the wall. What say you?
No, that was hilarious. That was... Okay, that was the first practice, I believe. The worst part is every time Checo crashes, everybody gets to see the RB19's underpanties, which is not very ladylike. So Checo has got to knock it off.
Yes, and obviously they all talk about the pressure it's getting to him. Now that he has been on the podium again, he needs to really... Like Christian Horner said, forget about the championship, just drive the car. And I think that's what he should do. That is definitely a podium car. And if he's not bringing that car in second or third, you know, that's very, very bad. But we shall see. Anything else you liked in Quali, Senor?
No, I didn't like anything in Quali. And Fernando didn't like it either. Max doesn't like this funny business. And the worst part, now we're going to Spa, and this is another sprint weekend. So hopefully I'll be able to decipher the shootout from qualifying and the rest of it. I'm sort of old-fashioned, Nasser. I'd rather watch Watkins Glen, 1976.
You know, the problem with these qualifying, pre-qualifying, I don't know. I was watching something and I'm saying, okay, that's the grid. And then the announcer said, we'll be back in 2 hours to set the grid. It's just too much going on, you know. I mean, we have Brad Pitt and we have Lola Falana and everybody's coming. Pretty soon we're going to see Roseanne Barr on the grid interviewing drivers, bringing everybody. But that's the way it goes in the new. And, if, you know, we'll talk about this Vegas. I don't know if you heard about the latest $1,500 per head that the Las Vegas Grand Prix wants to charge all the restaurants and bars along the strip where the Grand Prix will take place. Have you heard about this?
Oh, yes. It's the talk of the town. I mean, I know people in Vegas. Everybody's trying to get me to go to Vegas. Oh, come on over, Clark. You can stay at my place. Oh, Clark, come on. You're the host. You've got to be in Vegas. And I tell all these people, no, no way. I'll just look at something and I'll get a bill. So no, it's going to be terrible for a lot of these businesses. They thought that they were going to cash in. The customers were going to spend millions because they could see the race out of your beautiful restaurante. And all of a sudden, they're spray painting the windows if you don't pay up. Sounds like extortion, but what can I do?
They have even gone to the extent of saying, because the race is at night, that they will beam high voltage lights towards this area so the people there cannot see the race. I mean, talk about viciousness in the pursuit of money.
I agree. I mean, I don't think it's not cool. You know, we're going into a world that's evil. And that's what Vegas is. I said it a year ago that there was going to be evil. I think they're trying to maximize their deposits with the popularity of Formula One right now and Netflix and Drive to Survive and the Brad Pitt movie, which I heard is not going to be that great. It's going to be more like Stallone in one of your favorite movies, Nasser. So, I don't know. Yeah, what happens when you get greedy? You get greedier. But I think this is all going to implode. I just hope it doesn't happen in the next 10 years. But I think we're biting way, way too much. We're trying to be too glamorous, too big, too machismo. And usually those things wind up blowing up in your face.
Like the tech bubble.
Gracias, muchacho.
Okay, sir. Now let's talk a little bit about the race. But I have to say that this race... I mean, I enjoy watching every Formula One race, but there was a race in Abu Dhabi some years ago when Lewis won the championship there. That was probably the only time I ever said to myself, watching a Formula One race, why am I doing this? I was like, you knew who was going to win the race, who was going to be second and all that. And this race came pretty close to that level of excitement. But it's still a motor race. I still prefer this more than anything else in this world. But in days of Uber domination, the result of the race on Sunday is known before qualifying ends on Saturday. Reminds me of the days of Iron Mike Tyson. The issue was not if he will knock out his challenger, but which round. If you turned on your RCA in living color for round 3, it was probably too late. And I know this from a personal experience once, trying to watch a Mike Tyson about at a French place many moons ago. The world has moved on from RCA to Samsung, and Max is making everyone listen to songs sung blues. Even Toto is happy to pay royalties to Nando when he said, Max is making everyone look like GP2 Fear, or making all the cars look like GP2 Fear. Lucky for him, his drivers are doing the screaming. Max has won all races since round 5 in Miami. 9 out of 11 races so far this season. His victory put Red Bull with 12 wins in a row ahead of McLaren's record from the 1988 Halcyon days with Senna and Prost. And interestingly, that record was also set with a Honda-powered vehicle, or vehicles I should say. Max also set the fastest lap of the race, his 6th of the season. Now check this out, Mr. Rogers. Since the beginning of last season, Max has scored same number of wins, 24 from 33 races, as Fangio did in his entire career, which included 5 championships. Now, of course, there were much fewer races. Cars were not so reliable, but these numbers are very impressive. And Max has won more wins since Bahrain 2022 than Nelson Piquet and Kimi Raikkonen in their respective careers. I think he will have 50 plus wins by the end of the season, and I have a feeling we are looking at 70 plus wins by the time he has a Ford in his future at the end of the 2025 season. And you know, last year he set a new record, 15 Grand Prix wins. Most likely he will beat his own record within 12 months, so more power to him and his GP2 engine. His worst finish so far this season, oh man, this is so bad, second in Saudi Arabia and Azerbaijan. CCR needs to record a new song, Who'll Stop the Max Rain? And as long as you can remember, Mr. Rogers, and you've been around the block, F1 block as long as I've been, have you seen such absolute and ruthless domination before?
Mercedes dominated pretty good once Nico Rosberg left the field with his championship. You have to admit, Hamilton had a good run. Anybody under that would be Schumacher for sure. I don't know. But I don't think it's going to last that long. I see teams catching up. And the domination is going to end soon, and especially since the rules are changing. But it's interesting. I mean, look how well McLaren is doing suddenly. Unfortunately, Aston Martin was doing well, but they lost their je ne sais quoi. And even Fernando is beginning to become a little frustrated. And I hope he can put it all together. And I hope they can make some upgrades to catch up with McLaren. But it's very impressive. And Alpine, they look fast. I'm thinking Renault, how wonderful it would be. They just keep shooting themselves in the foot, artificially or intelligently. It's bizarre.
Next, we go to peeling the papaya. At the start, kudos to both Lewis and Max for not doing a Monza 2021. Once the pass was executed without any collateral damage, I knew Red Bull and Max would steam ahead. The real surprise was Oscar Piastri passing both his teammate and pole sitter and staying within striking distance of Max. I never expected Oscar to get his maiden win by passing Max on the track, but leading some laps like Lando at Silverstone would have provided much needed irrational exuberance. Oscar has not even done a full season of racing in Formula One, but he has delivered notice that his bite is worse than his dingo bark. It would be so interesting if you could get a win at McLaren, if he could get a win at McLaren before Norris, just like JB got two before LCH got one when they were teammates at McLaren. Oscar finished fifth at the end of the 70-lap race. His teammate Norris got his second consecutive podium. Despite all the improvements at McLaren, he was 33 seconds behind car number 33. But both drivers are looking very good. Zach Brown is a happy chappy, so hopefully they will catch up. On the podium, Norris was a bull in a china shop. Max was still happy, saying he has same number of wins as Lewis's car number. And this is what Mr. David Byrne would call sand in the Vaseline. Do you think that was a nice Dutch zinger of the day from Max?
Yes, because it's mild, it's obvious. LCH knows he's 44. So it's all pleasantries, love amongst drivers that really don't like each other.
Do you think a day will come when there will be a lot of lovey-dovey between these two, Lewis and Max?
No. That's a relationship that won't happen. It'll all be very artificial and fake. Unlike their relationship between Lewis and Fernando, which is becoming more loving, more appreciative, more introspective. You know, they're finally getting the big picture as they grow old. It's interesting, especially once they have grandchildren. It'll be loving.
I think of all the drivers out there, Fernando has the most respect for Lewis as a driver.
And vice versa.
Yes. Okay, on a historic day for Red Bull, Sergio Perez fought his way from 9th on the grid to 3rd place finish. LCH was 4th, as someone wrote on the interweb. His comeback lasted a few hundred meters. Both Mercedes cars are looking very racy in the closing stages on low fuel. But I have to say that the Max and Lewis rivalry will become very intense, like 2021, once Mercedes gives Lewis a little more oomph in his Mercedes hybrid system. But I don't think it's happening tomorrow, so we'll see. We will have to wait till the 2024 season to see if Toto can give LCH a car to go singing and winning. I definitely want Mercedes to win some races. It'll be nice if Machismo can get one with the green, jolly green giant. Russell was 6th, then the two Ferraris, Leclerc ahead of Sainz Jr. 9th was that old man of the choppy seas, Fernando Alonso. The early season podiums are being lost in the fog of Formula One. Machismo has scored points in each and every race of the season so far, so that's very, very impressive. His teammate Lance was 10th. He has scored points in 7 of the 11 races so far this season, but no podiums compared to 6th Fernando, including podium in the first 3 races. Both Aston Martin in the points is good for Lawrence of Canada and the pocket of Machismo. 3 drivers failed to finish. Logan Sargeant spinning 3 laps from the end. What was happening there, Mr. Rogers?
I think he was on TikTok.
TikTok? Now, both Alpine drivers, something you mentioned at start of the show, Ocon and Gasly, they were out in the opening 2 laps. Both were innocent victims of argy-bargy. And Ocon's seat was broken after his car was launched in the air by the Honey Badger. 13 was the lucky number for Ricciardo. He started and finished 13th, 2 places ahead of teammate Tsunoda. Were you surprised that he was able to qualify and race and finish ahead of Yuki?
Unfortunately, because of this weird tire allocation thing in qualifying, Yuki got the Isaac Hayes CD. But anyway, we'll see what happens in Spa. I think Yuki is so fast. I think Ricciardo should be careful because, like you said, he started 13th, finished 13th. I think a lot of people expected a lot more from him. But we all said that about Nyck de Vries.
Yeah, but he's driving a AlphaTauri, so that's the best he could do. But we will see what can be done here. Yeah, poor Nyck de Vries. I think he'll find his feet somewhere. You know, there was a picture circulated on social media of him having cappuccino or maybe some Dutch herring with Toto in a Monte Carlo cafe. So hopefully he'll come back. There's always IndyCar racing.
And there's always just working for Toto. I mean, he's a billionaire. All he has to do is put him on his staff. Just do the upstairs bathrooms, Nick.
Yes. I'm very surprised that the person you always see now is Jerome D'Ambrosio, you know, from Belgium. And he used to be in GP2 and did a few Formula One races. I'm sure he's bringing, you know, some expertise in management or whatever that Toto has him at every race. So good for him. Okay, now let's take a look at what I call one-way championship. Max on top with 281 points. Checo second with 171 points. Okay, so he is so many points behind. And I don't know if he said it or at least his father was quoted as saying that he said he's never coming back to Mexico till he wins the championship. So he might be racing for, some team in his 50s and 60s. Alonso is third in the championship with 139 points. Only 6 points behind in fourth is the ghost of 2007. Objects in mirror are closer than they appear. Machismo. But we'll see how this thing works out. It's so much about having the right package. Now let's take a look at the Constructors' Championship. This is one freeway of love. Red Bull leading with 452 points. Mercedes second, 223. Aston Martin third, 184 points. Ferrari, the most successful team in Formula One history, is fourth, 167 points. Now this is 285 points behind Red Bull, and we are only halfway through the 22 races on the schedule. Scuderia Ferrari needs help from Mrs. Fletcher.
I've fallen, and I can't get up.
Anything else you want to say about the racer? Any observation, comments?
It's amazing how well Albon is really taking Williams by the reins and really shaking it up over there. Somebody in IndyCar took a cheap shot at Logan Sargeant. It could have been Michael Andretti. I can't remember, but who knows?
What did they say?
Oh, something about Colton Herta could do a better job. You know, the usual crap that comes out of Indianapolis. But it's interesting.
Yeah, let me just tell you something about these people who take cheap. People have the right to their opinion. Some of us pay some attention, if not a whole lot. Colton Herta raced in British 2015 Formula MSA, which became British Formula 4. He was blown away by Lando Norris. even though he won 3 races, I think Lando won 8 races. And everybody, including Dan Ticktum, was blown away by Lando Norris. Next season, Colton Herta raced in a series which has a fancy name, at that time at least, Euro Open Formula, okay, which is nothing but a fancy name for Spanish F3. In the days of British, F3 was very strong. Then we had the German and the French. Spanish was like the fourth or fifth tier of Formula 3 races. When Colton Herta did not win that champ, when he did a full season, I think it was 2016, I knew right then and then, if you're in 2 years in European racing and you can't win basic Formula 4 in England, winning in England is very difficult anyway. But when he did not win the championship in his Spanish F3 season, I just knew this kid is as good as he is, which he is. He's not Formula 1 material. And you know, the other person they sing song here, because he's doing very well here, is Pat O'Ward. Okay, Pat O'Ward, I think, is the driver who had the shortest tenure at Red Bull Racing. Red Bull picked him up, put him in GP2, granted few races, but he did what David Hobbs would call diddly squat. Nothing, okay? Liam Lawson won on his debut. Simple as that. Then they put him in a few Super Formula Japanese Pat O'Ward. He did diddly squat. And Liam Lawson won on his debut also. So they can take cheap shots on anybody they want, but they need to have a nice mirror from Sears Roebuck to see themselves in the mirror, so what's going on. And as far as Logan Sargeant is concerned, this kid is, he won the karting European, I think it was the karting world, yeah, it was the karting world championship he won some years ago. In Formula 3, not too long ago, he took the championship battle against Oscar Piastri to the final race. And I was watching that on video on YouTube. And if I remember correctly, going into the final round, Logan Sargeant was leading the championship and then he had some argy-bargy. But he lost the championship. And then he moved to Formula 2. I think he did only one season. He was very impressive. So this kid is very good. The problem in Formula 1 is what Nyck de Vries found out. Now, he took 3 years to win the Formula 2 championship, so that's another story. But lack of testing and all that, and Logan Sargeant is not in a race-winning car. So I would like to see his American owners give him, without any high pressure, at least 2 full seasons, and hopefully he can catch up. But at the end of the day, it's Logan Sargeant that will have to deliver the goods, not you and me or some other person singing his fanfare. So that's my 2 take on Logan Sargeant. He's a good kid from Boca Raton, Florida. Business of Formula One is all about performance, but I would love to see this kid get 2 full seasons, and then if he can make it, kudos to him. If not, as always, Indy cars and Formula E and Linnes car.
On that note, Master, I will text Brian Herta. And why don't we take a quick break and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm Guan Yizhu from China and you are listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the King, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And dance, motorsports dance by the Danube continues with Formula 2. Sprint race on Saturday was won by Norwegian driver Dennis Hauger. Red Bull and Honda junior Ayumu Iwasa was second. He is as quick as Yuki, but without the kabuki theatrics of Tsunoda. Third was young English driver and Ferrari junior, who is doing a very good job in his rookie season, Oliver Behrmann. I think he could be the next biggie from GB. The line at the moment is pretty long and heavy duty. LCH, GR, and LN. There were 2 Indian drivers in the top 6. Pretty impressive. Jahan Daruvala in 5th, just ahead of Curry compadre Kush Maini. Daruvala used to race against Lando Norris in Formula 3 and I believe raced against him in Formula 2 also, and has been doing Formula 2 for quite a few years. At one time, he was also sporting Red Bull colors, and you know those colors fade very fast if you don't perform. My 2 rupees are he should cross the pond and put the Indian in the Indianapolis 500. And we interviewed Daruwala when he was in karting. Actually, it was the same day we interviewed at the same karting event, Logan Sargeant. Sunday feature race, Jack Doohan started from his first pole position in Formula 2 and went on to take victory. And this is Jack's second season in the series. Frederick Vesti, a Mercedes junior, was second and extended his lead in the championship. And Vesti is from Denmark. Third was Victor Martin, your French homeboy. He is an Alpine junior like Doohan. And Jack Doohan himself was in the Vaseline hands of Dr. Marco previously. In the championship, Vesti leads with 153 points. Second is your fellow Frenchman, Theo Pourchaire, 142 points. And I think Pourchaire is in his third year of Formula 2. And Iwasa is third, 132 points. Now we go to the baby sister of Formula 2, which would be Formula 3. Race 1 on Saturday was won by Gabriele Mini from Don Corleone Land over Gabriel Bortolotto of Samba Land. And Nikita Badrin from Vodka Land was third man on the podium. Sunday's race 2 was won from pole position by Williams Jr. from UK, Zach O'Sullivan. This kid is 18 years old and doing well. Second was Swedish driver Dino Biganovic. He is from, like I said, Sweden, but of Bosnian heritage. And he's a Ferrari Jr. with Argentine Franco Colapinto third. Top three in the championship are Brazilian Bortoleto, 144 points. Second is Williams Jr. O'Sullivan, 101. And third is Spanish driver Jose Marti on 100 points. IndyCar racing from Iowa. Double header at the Rusty Wallace Design Oval Track in the Corn Country. Penske pilot Joseph Newgarden had the perfect harvest over the weekend, winning both races. Very impressive. He is now second in the championship with 397 points. Alex Palou is the muy macho hombre de España on this side of the pond, leading the championship at 477 points. Palou is driving for Ganassi but moving to McLaren IndyCar team next season after pulling his own Piastri move. Everyone wants to go to the moon and McLaren, hoping Mr. Brown will take them to the promised land of Formula 1. Well, we already discussed this, but it's in the script, so I'm going to ask you, Mr. Rogers, do you see any of these Indy race car winners like Palou, Pato, and Colton making it to Formula 1 in our lifetime?
It's a long shot. Anything is possible, especially as Zach Brown gets a little more popular as he's starting to get closer to the big win in Formula 1. We'll see. I mean, Pato, Palou, all of them. I always want everybody to be successful, Master.
Absolutely. But you have to, deal with racing reality. The best chance, I think, is for Colton if Michael Andretti gets his F1 entry approved. So we'll see. And of course, here we are not waiting for somebody to fail or anything. But, in Formula 1, you basically got one shot. And if you're racing in Europe for 2-3 years and none of the teams pick you up, then the writing is on the wall. That's what I based on what I said earlier. Anyway, moving on, WRC. Estonia was the venue. Victory for Toyota driver Kalle Rovanperä over the Hyundai of Thierry Neuville, who is from Belgium, if I'm not mistaken. In the championship, Rovanperä leads with 170 points over Elvin Evans on 115. And Evans is also a Toyota driver. Neuville is third with 112 points. Now, this is very interesting, Mr. Rogers. Who can forget Truly Train? Formula Regional Japan. Truly Train. Japan has the bullet train. Yarno has exported the Truly Train to Tokyo in the form of his bambino, Enzo Truly. And according to Yarno, his son is not named after Enzo Ferrari, but after his own father, who was Enzo Truly. Over the weekend, he stopped on the podium platform a couple of times at Motegi Circuit, which is owned by Honda, and it was on the oval version of this track that Miss Danica Patrick, your new favorite TV presenter, took her only victory of her racing life. And now, sir, I hate to be the bearer of sad news. From motor racing to MBA. Sad to report, big loss to the world of motorsports. Gotifi, also known as Nicholas Latifi, has decided to put his helmet on the shelf where it always belonged and pick up some books. The Grand Prix legend will now pursue an MBA degree in UK. Better and faster idea would have been a crash course, no pun intended, at the Abu Dhabi University. Are you going to miss Gotifi, sir?
I do. I miss him already. I mean, and you know who else is missing him? Is Toto. I mean, those safety cars, you know, can change a race instantly. And you know that better than anybody.
How does that work out? Tell me.
You just have to talk to Massey. I mean, we all know it's a motor race.
Yeah, Clark, it's called a motor race. Man, does that comment bother me even to this day? Hell yeah. But we have to move on. But sometimes you move on with excess baggage. That's the problem. Okay, sir, on a lighter note, we come to Morricone moment. One of the tunes from Ennio Morricone's compositions for Spaghetti Westerns is called Watchers Are Being Watched. They must have seen this movie at Renault Corporate HQ recently. The news is Alpine CEO Laurent Rossi, man who was taking names and showed Le Professeur the door, has been given a taste of his own medicine. He has been replaced effective immediately. This is my new favorite word in motor racing, effective immediately, by Philippe Krief, who previously worked at Alfa Romeo, Maserati, and Ferrari, and is a very accomplished gentleman in the world of motor engineering and motorsports. Now that Nando is gone, let's see if Philippe can bring 6 tenths to the team. I think somewhere in his Swiss chalet, Alain Prost is saying, Le Karma. Are you surprised that Mr. Rossi was let go?
No, I'm not surprised. There's been reshuffling going on for quite a while. I think Renault is trying to come up with a decision why to keep this team and stay in Formula One. They only supply engines to themselves now. Renault is a huge company, but the market is very, very testy. So we'll see what happens, but they could pull out, but I don't think so, because I think they signed the Concorde Agreement. I want them to be successful. You know that, Nasser. I'm just wishing that they did well with Nando, but now all that's gone, and now we have Karma, and I don't know, Nasser, and Zaffnauer. I don't know what's going on at Renault.
Apparently, the CEO of the Renault Group, Luca Di Meo, he is trying to relaunch or launch Alpine brand in the USA in the next few years, especially with the electric cars. So we'll see how that works. Time will tell. Okay, sir, now we come to Tales from the Trip. First of all, many thanks to Signor Pat Scopelliti for his time, company, and travel expertise in and around Watkins Glen. I had a great, great time. We begin with Pat giving us a lap of the world-famous track, once a very proud home of the United States Grand Prix. Take a listen.
So this is where is it going past start, finish. Typically, in a real car, you do 150 to 180, and this is all downhill coming into the 90, and the car gets light through here because it's downhill, and you kind of dance your way around the turn, come out to here.
And please tell me the venue where the accident happened for Sevier.
Correct. Yep. Coming up here. Right now we're in turn number two. Turn in. Do a late A, but apex, typical. And Sevier right here touched the curb on the left. He was in third gear where the car was really bouncy. And that threw him across the track, hit the fence there, and then ricocheted at 150 straight into the fence. On the left, driver's left. Coming out on the back straight, this used to be the straight completely without the inner loop. The inner loop was done in 92 after two things happened. One is a NASA car driver got killed. That was mostly his fault.
Was that J.D. McDuffie?
Yes. Yes, sorry, I was just complaining. But the real reason that they did it was because of Tommy Kendall, who came through here, lost a wheel, and hit the fence at 150 or so. Broke his feet really, really bad. He still limps to this day from it.
I was watching both those races live on TV.
Yep, yep, so was I. If you look at the video of J.D. McDuffie, as he's spinning, he's got his shoulder out of the car holding on, which meant his seatbelts weren't on. These weren't on tight. This is now coming into turn six, coming into the boot. A fun part of the track.
Please also point out the where Koenig crashed.
Yes, we are now coming in to the uphill toe of the boot, where no one has enough power except Formula One. And right here on the left at station 7A is where Koenig went off. He threw the lower seat guardrail, but not the upper, causing a fatal to him.
And he was beheaded.
Yes, he was. Yeah, I didn't want to say that, but yeah. It was quick. Now we're coming into turn eight. And for those of us who aren't in really fast cars, there's a little cheat right here. There's a little bit of curbing right here. And then you just turn in and just let the car go down here. And now we're coming into turn nine, which is the uphill. And it comes in at off camber. On the camber. Then it's flat. And then people think it's on camber, and it's not. It's flat. So they tend to whip out and pick off the fence. And then from there, it's flat out. Ferrari, I was in fourth gear coming into here. Just a lift to settle the car and turn in and get on the gas, which we can't do today, obviously. This is turn 11, which is important because your speed through here matters what your speed is all the way down this long, long straight. And we're passing start to finish right now. Pits are right to there. They've been rebuilt several times, especially after the Formula One days. The stands back here used to be a Nazareth years ago, and Nazareth kind of closed. Coming into the 90 again.
This is our third lap, right?
Second.
What's the second lap?
Second, right, second. I got me confused. Third, yes, this is the third. Do you want to take...
Highlight of this trip were three laps of the full circuit in his high-performance Toyota Prius. No, he did not create a truly train. Going to the Glen, Mr. Rogers was very high on the bucket list. One of my major goals is to visit every Formula One track that was on the 1973 calendar, my first year of following the pinnacle of motor racing. Kyalami in South Africa, Montjuic Park in Barcelona, Zolder in Belgium, Monte Carlo and Paul Ricca still remain to be visited. Of these, apart from Kyalami, all the others can be knocked out in one trip, but hopefully we'll get all of them done in the next 12 to 18 months. That's the plan. Watkins Glen was the season finale and was going to be, and this is going back to 1973, it was going to be the season finale and Jackie Stewart's 100th and final Grand Prix. He was going out in style after winning his third world championship. Sadly, it was not to be. He withdrew after the vicious and fatal crash of his teammate François Sivet on Saturday. I still remember my brother waking me up at 7:30 in the morning, Sunday morning, to deliver this news back home. Not sure why, Mr. Rogers. Maybe because I was 14 years old and this was the first season of passionately following Formula One. This moment in motor racing history, tragic moment I should say, since I've been following, has had the biggest impact in my memory bank, more than Zolder 1982 and even more than Imola 1994. I just can't seem to get this out of my head. Sivet's only victory came at Watkins Glen in 1971. Unfortunately, there were other tragedies at this track. The following year, young Austrian driver Helmut Koenig was killed during the Grand Prix. And some years later, I was watching the NASCAR race in which J.D. McDuffie crashed with fatal consequences. And Pat pointed out all these areas to me. And the area where Sever was killed, you know, it's going up and there's like a bridge. So he hit the right side and then car went into the left side. And I believe the guard railing collapsed and just it was instant fatal accident. The drive to the track near Lakeside. Have you ever been to upstate New York, Mr. Rogers?
No, sir.
Not even in your singing days and traveling the country by Greyhound?
Correct.
Okay. I have to tell you, the drive to the track near Lake Seneca in the Finger Lakes region of upstate New York is as impressive and beautiful as the drive to the Red Bull Ring in Austria. Just a beautiful scenery. There is also a great Motor Racing Research Center library, which was closed by the time we got there. But here is a shout out to Pat. Trip number due is not too far away because I definitely want to spend some quality time at this Motor Racing Research Center. And when you are hanging out with a gentleman of Italian heritage, a trip to the gelato parlor is second nature. The country and Western music coming out of the speakers was a little out of place there. But the coconut vanilla ice cream was super delicious. And after we did the three laps of the circuit, the Prius headed to a lap of the old original street circuit, which ran for a few years in the 50s. And Pat has been living in that area for a long time, so he knows the back roads like the back of his hand. So I got a very nice local expertise tour. It is amazing when you go through these old circuits, safety was not even an afterthought. Kudos to the drivers of the era who raced at high speeds knowing fully well that if the car leaves the track, it will be brought to a sudden stop by a tree or a ditch. Not a happy scene either way. This is what I really liked. The village of Watkins Glen has kept its racing heritage very well. There are signs of the old circuit, so you can take a lap even if you are new in town and not a big, huge fan of motor racing. Once again, many thanks to Pat for a great experience. Per his suggestion, on Sunday I stopped at the Museum of Glass in Corning, not too far from Watkins Glen, and this was also very impressive. Both are shining examples of preserving history. And sir, it was, you know, it's always a pleasure to meet members of F1 Weekly Familia here, there, everywhere. And we've been lucky enough to meet quite a few over the years. So when we met, we decided that we will record a conversation on the grounds of the Watkins Glen circuit. So here is our little conversation with Pat, and hopefully our listeners will enjoy this. Okay, folks, greetings from the Glen, Watkins Glen that is. I am here with a longtime member of the F1 Weekly Familia, Senior Pat. And Pat, do me a favor, tell us your last name in your own words, please.
Scopoliti.
Grazie, Senor. Okay, good to meet you here. How are you, and how is the F1 season going for you?
Well, the F1 season is not doing great. I'm a Ferrari fan, so I'm not thrilled. Beyond that, it's fine. Nasser picked a wonderful day to be here. Great time.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm really having a very good time. Did you ever attend any of the Grand Prix here, and share some memories, please?
Sure. My first Grand Prix here was in 76, and I'm fond to tell people that I was baby ducked on the Sound as I came out on turn eight. The first car that I heard was the 12-cylinder Ligier Matra, and that sound just echoes to this day. After that, I came to the races every year until 1980. Me and my friends also did the Indy Car Weekend and the IMSA Weekend and so forth. Good time.
Now, obviously, Watkins Glen to this day remains a favorite for many drivers and industry people. Times were very different. Tell us how much access you have to drivers and teams and some experiences of, close encounter.
Right. Back in the day, Saturday night, you could see go in the garage. You were a foot and a half from the table where the teams were working on, you know, on the cars. You could talk to them, to the drivers. It was great. And that went on Friday night as well, Saturday. And obviously on the other weekends as well, the Indy with a car weekends, you could talk to the drivers. I remember Sneva, who liked to talk to anybody and everyone. His team gave him some busy work just to get him out of the way. And so he took care of that. He then picked up a can of allegedly soda. It wasn't soda. And he walked up and sit down talking to every other team. And it was very, very much a nice time. Sort of a family, you know, group.
You know, funny you say that. Many years ago, I was talking to Dan Gurney about Tom Sneva, and he had driven for him in Indy cars. And he said the same thing. You know, if Tom has a problem with his car, he'll go and talk to other teams first before he'll talk to other mechanics. Okay, you have done other races here, IMSA,
right.
Indy cars, and how is the crowd here? And obviously, there used to be the famous bog. If you could give us a little background on that.
Sure. The other two races I've been to here, I was pretty much a regular through the 80s and 90s. The IMSA weekends were just marvelous. Lots of excellent racing. We also came here for the Firehawk 24 hour races. Indy with a car was here at times. Who else? We were here for the vintage weekend every year. And what else? That's about it. Everybody pretty much except Formula One. It's a shame.
Have you done any of the NASCAR races here? And of course, the track is owned by them now.
Right. Exactly. The history of the track is that it went bankrupt, and Corning Enterprises, which is a Corning kind of a town thing, bought the track and brought it back to its life. ISC, which is the ones who own NASCAR, helped out, and as the track came back year after year, they sort of passed more and more ownership over. Back in the day, the big thing back in the Formula One days was, of course, the bog. The bog was an area which started out as a pool of water where people would basically cool off on a hot day. It developed into driving cars through the pool of water, which of course turned muddy. And it got to where if they would get a car stuck in the mud, they would leave it there. Then in the following years, they would start bringing old cars to drive through the mud, get them stuck there, and then burn them. And that peaked out in 74 when they stole a bus that had been rented by the Brazilian fans who were here to see Emo win his second championship, and they would have stole the bus, took it into the bog, and burned it along with all the luggage of all the people, which is not a nice thing to do. When the track opened in 84, their first thing was to kill off the bog. So the word bog was not allowed to be what I said. Within about 2 years, you could see families showing up again with the kids because they felt it was safe. Yeah, so that's... Have I answered the question?
Yes, sir. Thank you for sharing. And bog and the snake pit at India, classic.
Yes.
Okay, I understand you were also involved in some events at the Glen, historical vintage event. Please tell us about your activities here. And you live in the hood, right?
Yeah. I live about 20 minutes due to south of the track, so it's real easy. The event that I'm tied into most is the Grand Prix Festival, which is an enactment of the original race from 1948 in the town of Watkins Glen. And that event features, among other things, different groups of cars, up to about 200 cars, doing two laps of the old the old course. And those cars are led by a pace car in front and what's known as a sweep car in back. The sweep sweep car is me in my 1977 Ferrari. Nice red. They can easily see it. My little job there is to keep a track of the back of the pack and to also call in for help if somebody breaks down. I also keep the guys who run the event appraised of where the end of the pack is so they can get, you know, the next group staged.
Okay, your Italian heritage means passion for speed.
Right.
How old were you when you really got hooked into racing and Formula One, and was there any interest in the family?
No. I am a first born American. So my parents knew virtually nothing of it. As I got out of college, I got a bit of interest in, you know, cars. Can-Am at the time was, you know, the biggie, and what really sparked it was seeing the shadow Can-Am team stopping in my local, you know, town in Allegheny, New York, which is where Saint Bonaventure University is. And that kind of sparked it. And then a, you know, friend in 76 talked me into coming up here for the, you know, for the Formula One race. And the rest is history.
There you go. Now, the debate over GOAT. We all have our favorites and opinions. I have two questions on this issue. One, in your opinion, who stands out as the top five?
The top five. Okay.
You can add another one
sure,
or two.
Sure, yeah, sure. Well, let's see. Clark, Stewart, Senna, obviously. Schumacher, Hamilton. Although, I wish Hamilton had driven an inferior car for a while so he'd get a measure of really how good he is. He's always had a good car. Until this year, maybe. But, and who else? I was always a fan of Gilles Villeneuve. I know where I was on May 8th, 1982. A sad day.
Tell us about where were you?
Yeah, I was in, I was just flying down to Atlanta. I had just checked into the hotel, put on the TV, and Wide World Sports came on, and they had video of the, you know, crash. Sad day.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned Lewis Hamilton, so this is very important. There is a school of thought where out-of-control kids are claiming Lewis is lucky. What is your assessment of his driving talents? And you already told me his place among the GOATs.
Yeah, well, he's extremely talented. His race craft is excellent, and that's important. He's done some dirty stuff, but then every season, pretty much every, you know, singles he won has. That's how it is. If you're driven enough to be the world champion, you're driven enough to do some crazy things.
I'm hearing hybrid system will be dropped from the new regulations in 2026, and racing cars will sound like racing cars, like you mentioned, Ligier Matra. Yeah. Are you happy about this or okay with what we have now, a giant sucking sound of a Hoover?
No, I actually would love to come back to the sounds of the late 90s, the V with the 12s and 10s screaming at 19,000 RPM was just marvelous. Even though I may have lost hearing in one ear a bit because of it, I got caught in Montreal at the wrong time at the wrong place. But yeah, the modern cars or like vacuum cleaners.
You know, I was in Phoenix 91 for the GP, and Jean Lacy's car, Ferrari, had such a high-pitch sound, and a friend of mine who had some, I think he was working in Formula One in those days, he said he's using some, you know, in those days they had these exotic fuels, It really stood out. It was so awesome. So I am very excited if this thing happens.
Absolutely.
Now, Logan Sargeant is the only American in Formula One these days. How do you rate him?
I haven't seen him much. He's looked okay. It's tough to tell because of the car he's in. He certainly has not been at the tail end of every group. So he certainly has talent. It's just tough in Formula One to move up. It seems to be very much a family system. And if you don't know someone like Toto or Horner or Ferrari, it's tough to move up.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're not in one of these driver programs, it's very hard.
It's very tough.
Yeah. Okay, looks like Michael Andretti will get his wish and entry in Formula One. The Cadillac name, do you think that is just a marketing exercise like Alfa Romeo Sauber? Or is the general getting serious about Formula One thanks to re-entry by their crosstown blue oval rival?
Right. Cadillac has raced and won at Le Mans, right?
They've done well. I'm not sure they've done well. But their history goes back to Briggs Cunningham in the 50s.
Right, right. So, I mean, I'm all for it. Mikey's good. I'm not sure what Formula One has against him beyond they don't want to split up the pie. But Eddie and Michael will bring Americans like crazy. That name is such a draw. I'm actually looking forward to it, seeing him drive, not drive, but to seeing him race with his team.
Yeah, totally agree with you. And that name is not just an American. Andretti is a global draw.
Absolutely.
You know, people still have so much respect for that name. Now, how did you and when did you find F1 Weekly podcast?
Good question. That's way, way back in the before time. My guess is in the late 90s. Sound right? I was on a group called Autosy Race, which was an email group. And I think it was mentioned there, or was part of it, to be honest. We had a meeting at Indy, remember?
Oh, absolutely.
And that's how it got better, yeah. Yeah, my screen name was Monza Gorilla. And I remember when we all met for the first time, everybody had to give what their screen's name was, because, you know, Bill and Pat and Hamid and so forth didn't count because that wasn't what was used. So people said, oh, you're Simonza. Yeah, yep.
Yeah, interesting. Now, we passed the 1,000 mark this month. Mm-hmm. Are you surprised we have lasted this long? Because we are.
Well, no, because you guys do a nice, nice job. As long as there's a market, you'll keep on going. It has been a long, long time for you. You usually get lots of, you know, I've interesting drivers and folks associated with racing, so keep it up.
Thank you, sir. And I also thank you so much for taking your time and giving me this wonderful trip here, tour of the Watkins Glen. How about a message for other familiar members around the world?
Go Ferrari. That's about it. Have fun. Get to your local, you know, track. Get involved in autocross or SCCA or whatever your local racing is. It is a lot of fun.
Sure it is. Thank you so much.
Pat, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser?
Yes, sir. Finally, we come to Musical Mondial. Ferrari is not winning, so church bells will not be ringing anytime soon in Maranello. But we have today bells ringing in the Egyptian desert, courtesy of a concert at the turn of the century by Jean-Michel Jarre, son of Maurice Jarre, famous for theme of many movies, including Dr. Zhivago. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy Bells.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.